Ben Işık Kale. So, ladies and gentlemen, okay. As far as the what my function here is tonight, my function is not to pastor. Let me make that clear. My function is to educate the community on the parameters of the issue, present a variety of opinions with people I consulted with, not in the form of a stock, but individuals whose opinion I value, and ask them what they suggest, how we should proceed. In particular, I'm referring to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. This year, when I was asked to speak about this problem, it happens to be an absolutely fascinating historical problem, and you'll see why I say historical. It's come up throughout the modern period in fury at least three times, and the issue, as you were going to see, has not really been resolved. It's resolved in practice, but not been resolved in theory. In any case, the shiur will take somewhere around about an hour and a quarter. Okay, I don't know for sure, but it's not going to be an hour. It's going to be a little bit more than an hour and a quarter. I will do my best not to express my own opinion. That can be done in private circles, or if I'm pressed to the wall, I'll give my own opinion. I don't think, is there anybody except for my wife who really knows what I think? I don't know what people think I think. To be honest, I'm not sure what I think. It's not a trivial issue. Okay, I think it should be very clear that throughout Jewish history, and in fact, general history, we don't really find women in long-term leadership roles until the modern period. One outstanding exception in Jewish tradition is the prophetess Devorah, about whom it said, "Udvara isha neviya, he shofetet et Yisrael be'etahi." The role of the shofetet, of the judge, but the word shofetim doesn't necessarily mean judge, it means leadership. From the word shvati, which means to deal out, can mean punishment or retribution or protection. The word shofet has many, many implications to it. In any case, the role of shofetet was a combination of judge, and Devorah was clearly served as a judge and a leader. And clearly, it presented a problem for the poskim with a variety of possible interpretations. We're going to return to the discussion of Zohar, because we can't get away from it. And I'd like to skip now to the beginning of the 20th century, some fascinating history. And if you want to get some of the details of this period, there was an outstanding book that was written by Menachem Friedman, who dealt with this particular period of the early 1900s. The fact of the matter is that even in general society, having women in leadership role was, again, quite not very common. It was only after World War I that women began winning the right to vote and to be elected to public office. In 1917 in Russia, in 1918 in England, 1919 in Germany, in the U.S. and Canada in 1920, in liberated France, the land of liberty, égalité, fraternité, it occurred, women get the rights until the close of World War II, that is 1944, and in enlightened Switzerland in 1971. In the response to literature, the issue of women in public office becomes a hot issue during the period of 1918 to 1920. And you have to understand that following World War I, Palestine becomes a British mandate and prepares itself for self-government and the implementation of the Balfour Declaration and civilian rule. The whole world was talking about women's suffrage, so why not Palestine? And there ensued a very impassioned polemic with leading poskim in Eretz Yisrael, but not only in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael doesn't belong only to Israelis. The people who got involved were people from Europe and America and espousing all sorts of views. The issue heated up, we'll come back to this argument, but the issue heated up again in the early 1970s when women's lib began to have its effect on the modern Orthodox Jewish in America, and the question of women sitting on synagogue boards became an issue. That was the early 1970s. And most recently, the question of hit the headlines with Leah Shagdiel's bid to sit on the Religious Administrative Council, the Moetzah Beit Din in Yerushalayim. We have this source page, which I've distributed to everyone. I'd just like to point out that if anybody's interested in further discussion, I've actually written an article on the subject, which is available here. I only have 50 copies, so only take it if you really want it. God willing, it will be it has been translated into English and will be sent to some Torah journal in the near future when I finish editing it. In any case, I think we should begin our discussion this evening with the relevant psukim from the Torah. Look at the source number one, which is on the top right-hand side of the first page. Ki tavo el ha'aretz asher Hashem Elokecha noten lach v'yivishtach v'yashavta va v'amart asim alai melech k'chol ha'goyim asher svivotai. Som tasim alecha melech asher yivchar Hashem Elokecha bo mikerv achecha tasim alecha melech. Lo tuchal latet alecha ish nachi asher lo achicha hu. Some tell us when we come to the land, you're supposed to appoint a king. Right? You cannot appoint a non-Jewish king, but it has to be from one of your brethren. Now, anybody who is sensitive to the language, and this was Chazal's forte, when they looked at the text, they weren't just interested in pshat. Every word, every letter was counted. And then therefore if there are redundancies in the text, they come to teach us something. And you notice as we went through the text, the word melech appears three times. Shom tasim, asima appears many, many times. For Chazal, these were clues that there are extra halachot to be derived. Now, halacha is transmitted to us in various fashions. Most of us are aware of the Mishnah and the Gemara. The Mishnah is Tanaitic literature codified according to topically, and Gemara is based essentially on the Mishnah. However, there is a codification of organization of material, Tanaitic material, which appears based on the Chumash. This is called the Medrash Halakha, the Mechilta, the Safra, the Sifrei. Again, Tanaitic literature, but using the book that they were used, beginning from, the jumping board, was the Chumash. And we have here a collection from the Sifri on Dvarim, and let's see what the Sifri says. First it says, Som Tophim. Okay, the redundancy of that formulation. But it says, Som Tophim, a Sima. There's a lot of times when the word Sima comes. So the Sifni in the very top, in source number two, Som Tophim, Met, Meneach El Tachta. That if the king dies, you have to appoint someone in his place. Melech, Velo Malka. Okay, there's where the rabbi is. Melech Velo Malka. The Sifri learns that you appoint a king, but not a queen. And you notice that it says Melech several times in the text, totally unnecessarily. Next, the pasuk says, Mikerev Achecha. Okay, the pasuk says, Mikerev Achecha, that you should pick one of your brethren. And then it says, Lo tuchal asim alecha ish nachri asher lo achichahu. Again, this is done. There's amongst your brethren, if he has to be Jewish. You can't appoint a non-Jew. You got to pick him from your brothers who's a Jew. All this repetition for a halachist is quite problematic. From which, in the Sifri, if you look through, states that not only can it not be a non-Jew, it can't be a demi-Jew, which means it can't be an Eved, and it can't even be someone who's not your brother in the sense that he's a convert. Someone who is a convert, someone whose mother was a convert. Now this, we have to understand this in the light of the fact of Shmaya of Talion, who are outstanding Talmudists who sat in the Sanhedrin, which is clearly a form of dominion. We'll come back to this point again. Just remember that these are our situation. We have to understand why, what the origin is. But again, Chazal are darshening the psukim, and this is one of the drashot. Okay. Now, I think it's important to note that the psukim go on in Pesach Tedvav to say that in contradistinction to a regular citizen, a king is forbidden to have too many horses, too much money, and too many wives. A regular citizen can have as many wives as he wants. A king is limited. A regular person can be as rich as possible, as well as he wants to. A king can. And you can have as many horses, as vehicles, automobiles as you want to. A king can't. He's limited. Furthermore, a king has to walk around, as the pasuk says. Okay, the pasuk says in pasuk 18, "Vayakish yudchet, vayakish shivto kisem anachtov katablo et mishnei Torah azot al sefer mifnei akonim arviim vayta imo v'karabo kol yemei chayav laman yilmad yirat Hashem elokav." The Gemara learns that he has to wear a sefer color, I assume a small one, around him, wherever he goes. The Torah goes with him to show what the ultimate authority is. Not the king, it's the Torah. And finally, it says, why must he carry the Torah with him wherever he goes? The vilti rum levavo me'echad. But it may very well also go on, why can't I have too much money, too many horses, too many wives? The vilti rum levavo me'echad. So he shouldn't feel himself above his brethren. The vilti sum and a mitzvah yaminu smol, so that he shouldn't turn left or right from the Torah. The manirich yamin al mamlachto, so that he will have his kingdom for a long time. Hu uvanav bekerav Yisrael. He and his sons amongst the people of Israel. Now the pshat in the pasuk is a king, being a king is indeterminate time, forever. Not only for you, for the king, but for his children as well. Banavir means male son, because if it meant female, it would have said Zar'o. And that's an important halakhic distinction. Okay. The notice that kingship is inherited. To summarize what we've learned thus far, by the way, I want you to look Yes. Look at the source number 2, Lamed Aleph. Zo mitzvat, it says, lo tukha lestatet alecha ish nachri, zo mitzvat lo tase, ish nachri asher lo achicha, mikan amru, ein memanim parnasa v'tzibur, you don't appoint someone to be a leadership position on the community, ad shetehei imo mi'Yisrael. Now, I want you to notice something very important. Not only does it make the statement that one has to be, his mother has to be Jewish, even though he's Jewish, he converted, but even his mother can't be a convert, his mother has to be Jewish. But it says something more. It all of a sudden, it switched to what? To use the terminology, parnas, which is a leadership position. It's not kingship. One could say, you know, this discussion is talking about a king. But the Sifri all of a sudden does some switches and says it's not only a kingship. We're also talking about here Tanakh. Now, when the Rambam, in source number 3, okay, now let's just sort of summarize what we learned until now. Now we'll see what the Rambam does. What we learned so far is that the following cannot be king: a non-Jew, a demi-Jew, which is a slave, the son of a convert and the son of a convert, and a woman, melech velo malka. Next, we learned that melucha and srara, the parnas, are inherited and of indefinite duration, and as we shall see, it's only if they're worthy. That if the son is a rasha, he doesn't necessarily get it. Now, I want you to go now, let's now read together the Rambam. The Rambam The Rambam in Halacha Daled. Okay, I apologize for the small print. I must have printed it up when I was young. Before multifocal. Any case. The Rambam reads as follows. Ein mamidim melech mikahal gerim. Then he says, Ad shiti imo miYisrael, shlema lo tukal atet alecha ish nafi. Skip a little bit. Velo malchut bilvad el lechol srarot shebi Yisrael. Lo sar tzava. This is from a Gemara. Lo sar tzava, velo sar chamishim, o sar atzara. Afilu memune al amat amayim, shemechalek mimenu l'sadot. Even somebody who has discretionary power to decide how much water allocation you're going to get, that's called tzara. Ve'en tzarich lomar dayan o nosi, certainly not a judge or the prince of Israel, it must be a Jew. It must be from your brother. It cannot be a non-Jew. Halacha hei. Ein ma'amidin isha b'malchut shenemar alecha melech v'lo malka. And now comes the punchline. וכן כל משימות שבישראל אין למנים בהם אלא איש. For all leadership positions, which is called שררה, or משימה, we'll have to define that. All those leadership positions can only be male. Now, there's halacha vav here, which I inadvertently skipped, so just listen. Actually, please, in the Chinuch, in source number 4, let me read you what the Rambam says, Halacha Vav, because we're going to refer to it later. Ein mamidim melech v'lo kohen gadol, lo katzav, not somebody whose profession was a butcher, v'lo sapar, a barber, v'lo galan, which is a bathhouse attendant, v'lo bursi, which is a leather worker, really a very stinky job, lo mipnei shehem sulin, not because they're inherently puzzled, since it is considered a low trade, people will say, who are you to tell me? You are just a bursi, a stinky leather worker. Okay? one day as a leather worker, you've had it as being king. Most of us say, who cares? But some people care. Well, the politicians stake their life on it. Okay, halacha zayin. כשמעמידים מלך, מושכים אותו בשם על המשכן, על הסקיף, כיוון שנמשך דוד זכה בקטע מלכות, והרי המלכות לא ולבניו הזכרים עד עולם. So the Rambam makes it clear, it's referred to male son. And towards the end now, ומאחר שמושכים המלך הרי זה זוכה לא ולבניו עד עולם, שהמלכות ירושה, שנאמר למען יאריכו ימים על מלכותו, הוא ובניו בטר וישראל. Now, many in the Forshim struggle with the fact that the Rambam sticks in, says not only kingship, but all roles of leadership. Now, the Sifri only refers when the Sifri talks about Parnas. It only talks about that halakha which is explicitly forbidden, that person who is explicitly forbidden to be king, to be a king. Who is that? Explicitly. A non-Jew. Jews can't point a non-Jew as king. That's what it says. Lo tuchal lechim alecha ish nachi. Everything else is a drasha. On that statement that a non-Jew can't be a king, the Sifri goes ahead and says, can't be any job, any leadership position. But the Rambam learns from that everybody else that it says, that the Chazal learn out from, that you can't be king, which is a convert, and a woman, and a someone who has had these jobs, that applies to all positions in Israel. And they search for a reason, a source for it, because it's not in our Sifri. Now, I want you to look at source 3b. It turns out that there are other editions of the Sifri. There's an edition of the Sifri, which is called Madurat Finkelstein. It also, there's a similar quote in the Psikta of Abtavtil, which is Som Tafsim Alech Melech Melech Velo Malka. And then what does it say at the bottom? Ein memanim ha'ishar parneset al tzibur. That is the continuation of the Som Tafsim Alech Melech Velo Malka. It continues Ein memanim ha'ishar parneset al tzibur. So it's actually in that reading of the Sifri and other cognate texts like the Medrash HaGadol. The Medrash HaGadol is a little problematic, but clearly the Psikta and this edition of this actually has this reading. There's a big debate about these alternate readings, whether they were put in because of the Rambam or just the source of them. We're very careful about our manuscripts nowadays. But it's not clear that they were careful about it all the time. I mean, if we have the Chaim Verbenu Gershom, that people were making changes in their text of the Gemaras all the time. They didn't put it on the side. They erased the text they had and fixed it. And that they passed on to their children. And the Rabbeinu Gershom forbade it, and Rabbeinu Tam forbade it. So it's not clear whether people changed the reading of the Sifri so it would jive with the Rambam, or that was the Rambam's source. It seems it's probably the latter. The Rambam may have had an alternate source. Okay, we'll come back to this point a little bit later as well. Now, one of the questions that we have to ask, and we have to summarize, according to the Rambam and sources in the Sifri, what is this Sroah we're talking about? So it's not only kingship. At least the way the Rambam understands, and remember, the Rambam is one of the major pillars of codification. He's not the only, but he's one of the major pillars of codification. Well, how do we understand what this Sroah is? How do we define it? Because remember, it includes King of Kohen Gadol, the head of the army. That's all understand. I mean, they have powers of life and death. One who's in charge of the water. Why is that? Why is that sort of? Well, yes, but I mean, they don't. I don't think they could prevent you from drinking the water. This is water that went to the field. Okay, but you're right. But I don't think that's the issue. Life and death is not the issue that concerns us. Also, one who's in charge of the measures. You know, in different Gemara talks about the person who goes around checking the measures to make sure the measures are right. That's also Sarah. I think to put this, the way that we can describe it is one who has discretionary power. That is, a person who the buck stops there. He makes the ultimate decision, and there's no real appeal after that. He makes the final decision. And the one who was given the job of distributing the water to the field was an important job. It wasn't the governor, but it was an important, it was a job, and he made that decision. Now, to understand this question, what's discretionary power, there's a very interesting tshuva, which says source number 7, turn the page over. It's a long tshuva of Rigvos Moshe. We're going to read selections from it, but much of it I'll talk out. Now, many of the sources I gave it, I brought it to you, so you should read it yourself. You know what it's about. These are fascinating sources. We don't have the time to go through it all in great depth. Time is limited. But Rav Moshe has deals with a very interesting question. A particular rabbi made his living from giving hashkacha. Rabbis could not make a living just being rabbis. And what they got, in addition, they took hashgacha. Okay, let me just tell you a cute story on the side. Some people know there was an Ira Weiss was here. There was a visitor from Chicago who was here over Shabbos. His claim to fame is that he was the cardiologist for the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Very special. He was flown in on some Kostero, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe had his first attack. And he was a cardiologist for a long time. Anyway, I was his Masada Kedushin. And the story is that they had champagne at the wedding, and they got a whole bunch of... He said that he didn't have anybody to pour it, so I got a whole bunch of guys from Harvard Hill, that's where I was a rabbi, and we started pouring the wine. The slave looked up to me and said, "Wait a second, aren't you the rabbi who performed the wedding?" I said, "You know rabbis can make it on one salary. So this is the story, that the rabbi couldn't make it on one salary, and he was doing hashgacha, still very, very common today. And he passed away, and his wife wanted to take over the hashgacha. Can she be the mashgicha? And the question came to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And this was a question of sha'atatcha. This is a question of was her livelihood. She wasn't a young woman, and for her whole life her husband had supported her, and she wanted now be the mashgicha. And she clearly was capable and knowledgeable enough to do the job. Rav Moshe starts the tshuva off by trying to understand, if we follow the Rambam's position, what is the definition of discretionary power? Okay? So, in source A, by the way, let me just, some of you are going to tell, in source A, he says, it's not clear to me what the source of the Rambam is. He may have analogized from non-Jew to this, but he wasn't clear. We now seem to know that there was an alternate reading in the Sifri. Okay, in source B, let's go see how he defines Tzara. Vashkechal kashrut mistaber shuminui. Being a mashkiach kashrut, that is a minui. The rayal is a mekidushin daf ayin vav, from the Gemara Kiddushin, she'ika b'ma'arava afilo reishkuri lo mokmi yunayel. That one doesn't appoint a ger to be the head of the in charge of the weights and measures. Upevish Rashi memuneh al amidot, in charge of the measures. V'hu mamash kamo hashkacha l'kashrut. Tamar lanu kashrut hamashkolot v'amidot v'kashrut yisurei machalot. This is supervision. What does it make a difference? It's a monetary supervision, but it's kashrut supervision. V'atam hu shachiluk v'en lachshivo l'poel u'v'en lachshivo. By the way, we're going to raise a lot of issues that to the modern person seems very, very strange. I ask of you just to hold judgment and hear me to the end, and then you'll begin to see why things in halacha nowadays have changed. But just bear with me so you understand halacha from its source. Okay. So he says, Vatamu. Why is it a problem?
שהחילוק בין להקשיבו ופה לבין להקשיבו לממונה, what's the difference between the one in charge or the worker? שהוא שררה, because being in charge is considered שררה, discretionary power, אינו מצד חשיבות המלאכה. It's not because of the importance of the job. אלא אם נזכר לעשות רצון המזכיר, הוא פועל. אף שהוא מלאכה חשובה. If your job is to do what the balabas asks you to do, then you are working. It makes a difference how important the job is. ואם נזכר לעשות נגד רצון בעל הבית, כשכחה על המשקלות ומידות שבעל הבית היה אפשר רוצה שיחשו לו גם משקל ומידה חסרים. והוא ממונה לפוסלם ולקחם לי הבעל הבית. If your job is to supervise the Baal HaBayit against what he wants, that's discretionary power, that's dominion. Because if you're working for the Baal HaBayit, no matter how important your job is, that's a worker. But if your job is to go against or be even critical of the Baal HaBayit and limit him, that's discretionary power. That's Shrara. אוקיי, שהוא שררה לבעל הבית, של הבעל הבית מחויב לעשות כמו שהמשגיח אומר. וכן הוא ממש ממונה להשגיח על הכשרות שמלאכתו לסוף אף נגד רצון בעל הבית, שלא להניח בעל הבית לקנו דברים אסורים. ואם כן, הרמב״ם אין למנות על זה אישה. וכל זה רמב״ם says, משה פיינשטיין, you can't appoint a woman to be. כל זה על argument, he says you can't appoint. We're going to be a Mashiach official. Then he goes on to say, but the Rambam is not the only source. And he holds on to demonstrate several sources. And we'll come back to this a little bit later. Several sources that disagree with the Rambam. A whole series of Rishonim. And I'll come back to this a little bit later. And then he says, but, B'shat Hadchak. Okay, but if in a stressful situation where this woman's livelihood depends on the situation, certainly these other opinions can be relied on so that she can continue to be a mashgichat kashrut. That is, he says, look, the Rambam is the pillar of halakha, and we would like to do it like the Rambam says. But these are tremendously dire situations. This is the only certified myself. Since there are major authorities, the Ramban and the Rajba and the Ran, and Rabbeinu Tam, who disagree with the Rambam, we can rely on these other sources to allow this woman to give the flexibility to allow this woman to continue to be Mashgiach Kashrut. And then, but then he goes on and he says, but I have a better idea. The better idea is we will ask some rabbi to be the Mashgiach, right? The Rav HaMachshir, that is the one who will assume the authority will be this male individual, and she'll do the work. Like that is, the OU is the boss, and everybody else who works for them, including women who do it all the time and for the OU, if you'd like to know, that's called the Rav HaMachshir. So the Rav HaMachshir is the person or the organization, and the Mashgiach is the person who's on the site who takes, he gets a salary from the Rav HaMachshir. He has problems, he goes to Rav HaMachshir, and he says if we do it that way, he says even the Rambam would agree, because she's now working for the Rav HaMachshir, not for the Baal HaBayit. Okay, I'll come back to this next tshuva. That's Mem Dalet. Mem Hey, we'll come back to the Rambam. Then he very talks about women as presidents of shuls, but we'll come back to that in a later discussion. Okay, now, so I think he's pretty much given us a very interesting idea of what the parameters are. It would seem that the President of the United States is clearly Sarah, the head of the Treasury is clearly Sarah, but the income tax auditor may not be Sarah, even though he doesn't, because you can always appeal over his head, okay? And once you come up to the person who's the buck stops here, now you can always say, look, I can go to the Supreme Court of the United States. Well, that's not what we mean. We mean, you know, that there's a person up to that point, then you have to start suing the United States government. That's a slightly different situation. Okay. Let's now try to understand a little bit about the rationale. Why have women been excluded from kingship and other leadership roles according to the Rambam? Interestingly, I didn't find any Rishon really discusses a reason. It might be that they felt it was eminently obvious, but it's certainly not eminently obvious for 20th century individuals. Formulations have only been put forward in the modern period, suggesting that the social consensus has changed and halakha Judaism was clearly on the defensive and needed to explain. Now, the most common reason given, and this appears Leo Levi, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Rav Moshe Meiselman, and Rav Leich, all suggest that there is definite role-playing in Judaism, and the man's role is a more public, aggressive one. As the Gemara says, Ha'ish dalko lechbosh, ve'in isha dalko lechbosh. That is the Rav Soloveitchik when he talks about Adam 1 and Adam 2 in different aspects, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik talks about it in some length. It's clear that from a Jewish perspective, these are not exclusive, but there seems to be a general trend that a woman's role is a more private, family-centered role, and it's based, they use the pasuk Kol Kvuda Bat Melech Tmima. Now it's clear that Kol Kvuda Bat Melech Tmima is a societally determined concept. It's very clear that what was true in the 1700s, 1800s is not true in the 20th century. Okay, even in Haredi circles, women go out and earn livings and are in the public thoroughfare. This is something that was almost unheard of 100, 150 years before that. So these are clearly concepts, the concepts of fundamental new concepts which have clearly societal underpinnings. Perhaps by limiting a woman's leadership possibilities, this position maintains. So Halacha reaffirmed where her priorities should be. The priorities should be in the home and not in the public thoroughfare. Another possible formulation may be the social reality. A leader with discretionary powers can only rule if he has the highest respect of the community, who are willing to obey, and as we saw before, the Orach HaShulchan, we saw from the Rambam, if you had a position, you know, there was a burski, or there was a tanner, or a barber, or some other, or a balan in the bathhouses, dealing with naked people, this was considered not the most respectable position, and therefore the feeling was that because of women's lower social standing in the community, that maybe that was the reason why, and the Aruch HaShulchan suggested why women weren't selected for leadership roles. And while that has even changed in the 20th century, there was a recent poll about the success of women in leadership. I mean, you know that there was a woman who just re-elected as Speaker of the House of Representatives, and it was a big to-do about it. It's upsetting that there was a big to-do about it. But there was a big to-do. Everybody was talking about it. The first time. And that sort of tells you that that voters, both men and women, tend to favor a strong father image than an iron lady. And that came up over when Margaret Thatcher, these studies were done when Margaret Thatcher was the prime minister, and they polled the voters, and it seems that she was an exceptionally unique individual, and therefore a one, but as a general policy, that was a general policy for the British. And another position is, which is radically different than these, is from a Chaim David HaLevi. So Chaim David HaLevi says, don't know. He says, I'd rather live with a good question than an answer I can't accept. And he says, it's his position that's what's called a Gzerat HaKatuf. It's a decree from heaven. Why? What the absolute reason is, I don't know. He wants to prove it from Shlomo Tzion HaMalka and Hilni HaMalka, the women who were queens, with the guidance of Chazal, who were praised by Chazal, and it's clear, he says, that they, in each case they got it through inheritance, either their father or their husband, and they were in the position.
And Chazal were interested in moving them out. So you see, there's no problem with her being queen. It's a problem being appointed queen. And that can only be, says Reb Chaim David HaLevi, because of the Gzeirat HaKatuv. Other posts can disagree with him. My Rebbe, Rebbe Yudha Gershuni, demonstrates that from the Rambam it says that who gets the Yerusha? Someone from the Pakara. Who? Vanav? And it's he and his male children. Why were Shlomatina Malka and Helmia Malka so praised by Chazal? Because the Chazal knew full well that if the person came in was supposed to get the position, they would not be as favorable towards towards rabbinic Judaism. They were from women, and they supported Torah Judaism. But they were not in those positions. They might very well have led to situations which were not favorable. And that seems to be a very possible consideration. Okay. Now I think it's time that we get down to the basic argument. I mentioned to you that the most of the literature on the subject was written in the early 1900s. Although there's been literature written since then. This is, again, if you want to get a beautiful, wonderful historical summary of this period, it's in Chevra Vadat, written by Menachem Friedman. And I'd like to summarize some of the arguments pro and con about the women's involvement in the political process. In the early 1900s, okay, I'm going to summarize the arguments in the early 1900s, and then we'll move to the modern period. There are essentially three halachic reasons, three hashkafic reasons about women's involvement. And the women's involvement was, at that time, in the early 1900s, was not only whether she could run for office, but whether she could even vote to be involved in the political process. The first argument was the Rambam. The Rambam clearly rules out women from running for office because of Melech Velo Malka, because it was discretionary power, and the Rambam says not only king and not queen, but also all leadership roles. If you look at the source page, source number 9A, and 9B, these are some of the arguments that were actually given against women being in leadership roles. And he says, the Zohar Kata Torah, forgive me, I don't remember exactly who the author was, but I think it's Rav Merzbach. He writes there, I don't care, he says, even Issa Gomer Menatora Yesh Lemnot Isha Leshum Sorad Demata, any leadership role in the community, Afilu and Kiblu Kol HaTzibur Utal Aleihem. He said, being in leadership role, making decisions for the community, is clearly svara, and I don't care if the whole community voted for that. If inherently it's svara, because the Rambam is Asher, and that's it. The Machzike Adadin by Rav Ritter of Rotterdam says, look, in Jewish communities, for centuries, women wore the leadership role. That's what are you coming around? Changing the situation. The third argument was that being involved in politics clearly involves the freemixing of the sexes, which was not appropriate from a Jewish perspective, and therefore it should be opposed. There are several hashkafic reasons given, and the person who gave these hashkafic reasons that we're citing from was none other than the Rav Kook. And this was a big surprise to the more liberal of the Orthodox camp to hear Rav Kook was viewed as this big liberal. And he came out with a variety of, not halachic reasons, but they're very interesting. He doesn't cite halachic reasons. Hashkafic reasons why he thinks it's a bad idea for the Jews. And by the way, we know that his
daughter-in-law, the Tzvi Yehuda cook's wife, was not happy with the situation. He says, she regularly writes me letters. The last couple of weeks since I gave my psak on this situation, she stopped writing me. Is it because she's not happy with what I said about women's involvement in the political process? I mean, that's just a sideline, but it's very, very telling. In any case, what were his reasons? And if you, and this appears on the page, and again, we're not going to, this section over here, and I will just go through it very, very quickly. He says that the family is extremely important in Judaism, perhaps more so than other cultures, and throughout Jewish history, the traditional woman has attained both honor and fulfillment within the family. Political activity will lead a woman to center interests outside the home and away from her family. Her interests and energy become split. She will no longer be as good as a mother as she can and will therefore weaken the fiber of the family. The next argument was that political activity by the woman in an active role will threaten, disturb Shalom Bayit because the husband and wife will now be expressing different opinions and therefore it would lead to a clash in the family. I said, please hold comment. Finally, and he said that politics has a negative moral effect on anybody that's involved or close to it. And he says, at least we should keep the woman above it. Okay. Amongst the scholars maintaining that women should neither run for office nor even vote, not to get involved in all the political process, was the Yeshua Le Diskin, the Yosef Chaim Zonenfeld of the Yedichalidi, the Bichil Michal Tukachinsky, who was then one of the leading Rosh Yeshiva and post-Kim in Yerushalayim, and considered slightly right of center, and last but not least, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook. There were many renowned scholars who, most of them in Europe and the States, who were against women running for office, but had no problem with them voting, and that includes W.C. Hoffman and Rabbi Eliezer Piel in the United States. Now, something happened. Something happened in the 1920s that changed the course of Jewish history. And most of you know that the Eda Charedis broke off from Orthodox Judaism and started leading its life by itself. Why did it do so? It did so over the issue of women's vote, right to vote. When it was decided by the Vadam, I forgot what it was called, the Moitzah Miyasedet, they voted and they decided that women would get the vote. The Eda Charedi said, look, there isn't an issue that we can ever vote, that we will ever win on. Because we're always going to come, they wanted to suggest, well, the Eda Charedi said a man should be able to have two votes against everybody else's, and that clearly wasn't accepted. And they said, look, you left us no options. Our women are not going to vote, not going to involve at all in the political process. Hit bad look. We're breaking off. And they broke off at this point in Jewish history in the 1920s over this issue. There was another group led by Rav Tzvita Safran who said, all right, we're not gung-ho about this idea, but there are post-Kim who tend to agree, and they became what's called Agudas Yisrael, and the women would not run for office, but they would go to the polls and vote. And that's what happened to Eda Charedis. The Eda Charedis did not notify the British that they were breaking off, because they didn't want to risk the implementation of the Balfour Declaration. But, and they kept it private. But that's exactly when the Eda Charedis and the Agudas Yisrael split and became two separate organizations. Now in this dispute in the early 1900s, there was another position expressed by the Mizrahi Pol HaMizrahi, which said as follows. המזרחי בתור הסתדרות עולמית בכל הכבוד והיקר שהוא רוכש לרבנות ובכל שאיפתו עמוקה להכיר בסמכותה בחיי העם מוכרח בכל זו לשמה בשל הזו לדעת הרבנים הגאונים שעמדו בראש ההסתדרות בכל משך עשרות השנים של קיומה ושנהגו בשל הזו היתר למעשה. Translation. Mizrahi is an international organization despite the honor and the esteem which it bears for the Israeli rabbinate. Okay? That means Rav Kook. And despite its deep desire to recognize the authority of the Israeli rabbinate in the life of this nation. You have to understand the chief rabbinate, when it was established, was viewed as the forerunner of the Sanhedrin. And here they had all this hope, great hopes, for the chief rabbinate and for the eventual establishment of the Sanhedrin. And here comes along Rav Kook and doesn't support women's right to vote, which... So they go on and say, must nevertheless follow on this issue the ruling of the rabbinic giants which have headed this organization during the past decades since its inception and have been lenient on this matter. So the Mizrahi said, we already have the Golden Apostle for us on this issue. We don't have to come to Rav Kook's Pesach. For decades we've been following the Pesachim of other Gedolim who permitted women's involvement in the political process. The lenient school included such scholars as the first Sephardic chief rabbi, Rav Ben Sion Chaim Zio, and Rav Yaakov Levinson and Rav Chaim Hershenson. In the modern period, the lenient school has included former chief rabbi, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Herzog, Rav Tibor Stern, the present Sephardic chief rabbi of Israel, Harav Elio Bakshi Daron, former chief rabbi, Shlomo Goren, Rav Shaul Yisraeli, Dayan Aryeh Brosnitz, the former of Jerusalem, and Rabbi Melech Turk in the United States. Now, to understand the lenient school and how do they deal with the several issues, I think it's important, first of all, we have to begin with a brief discussion of what democracy is all about. And this is the key. The government perceived by the Torah and by Halacha is radically different from democracy. And to explain this point, in biblical times, the positions always came from the top. It was the decision of the Navi, or one or more of the elders, the scholars, the giborim, the leaders, the money men. Vote, the appointment always came from the top. But democracy is a game of government with clear and pre-agreed upon rules. The first rule is majority rule, which means that even though the minority lost, it agrees to accept as its decision the majority position. Everybody agrees to accept the majority position. Now I want you to know what that means. That means if I vote for A and B gets elected by the majority, B was picked by whom? Not by the majority, by everybody. Everybody agrees that winner takes all. So that's what democracy says. Not just the majority picks them, everybody picks them. The second rule is that the election is for a limited period. And after 2, 4, 6, maybe even 10 years, we will have elections again. It means even though I lost now, I'll have a chance to win next time. What's more, there is a possibility of impeachment or recall if the majority is dissatisfied. The last rule is that the election is personal. It cannot be inherited or passed on to someone else. By will. Now, with our awareness of this new political reality, let's begin our discussion of Sroah anew with the case of Dvorah. Dvorah Nediyah, he shofetet Yisrael Beitei. Now, the fact is that Dvorah served as judge presents a double problem. Firstly, because the halakhic consensus is that generally women cannot serve as judges. Secondly, serving as a judge means that your decisions are binding and people are forced to pay. That's clearly Shrera. That's you forcing people to pay. But the Rambam forbade all Shrera to a woman, not only Melucha. So the Rambam will obviously maintain that Dvorah as a prophetess received divine approval as a judge. It was sort of like a divine horat shah. It was a setting aside of Jewish law because she was a prophetess. She was exceptional and no generalizations can be made. But the Tosfos disagrees. Turn to the first page again. And that's a very important question. Actually, we're at source number 5. We're going to read from the Rashba. Okay, but it's not only the Rajba, it's the Rajba and Tosod in several places, and Iran and other Rabbi Natan seems all this way. Let's see what he said. The Intom, okay, we're in the middle where the bracket is. In that Tosod number 5 and the fifth line. Vintama, Haktiv Vishofetet et Israel. How could she, if the woman is not right, so the Mishnah says, Velo benashim mikanshe nashim psulot ladun, so how is it that Dvoro was a judge? Yesh loma delo shofetet mamash, ela minaheget, she's minaheget kishofetet, she shaftu et Yisrael. She says, we're not talking about that she was